Do you like the Star Wars? Well, you've come to the right place because you're at the Rantcore Pit with myself, Cole Jedi Cole Houston, and...
And this is Eddie Medina.
And we are ready to talk of some Star Wars. And in this particular case, it occurred to me as we were hashing out ideas for your new episodes, because these are coming at an alarming rate, even with one every other week.
They definitely are.
That, you know, flattery is
imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Thank you.
And that, of course, is our special guest who swooped in, who flew in like a robin. No, we're not even going to go near Schumacher's Batman. That's our special guest, my great and oldest friend and as big a Star Wars fan as myself, as you're likely to find, Mr. Steve McCauley, who you've heard on shows on Hey Kids Comics, United States of Geekdoms, and others. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hi. I like the Star Wars.
Oh, well, good.
Well, you've
as previously
the right
mentioned, you've come to the right place. And yes, whatever you said earlier about flattery and...
Imitation.
And now that I completely flubbed the introduction.
Yeah.
Thanks for saving my bacon sure. there. That we another reference. We brought Steve in because I think he's a good interim in the age range between myself and Eddie. It's like a nice little stair step.
Oh, yeah.
In our ages and experience with Star Wars, and the fact that we've all been around long enough to remember when other movies, television shows, everybody was jumping on the coattails, hence the name R2-Me2, which, by the way, Steve came up with that. I can't take any credit for that. This was originally just Me Too.
Me too. I wanted to call it the Clone Wars, but I thought people would get confused. And then Steve came in with yet another save with his R2 Me Too.
I should have brought that in earlier to help us with the ending, the closing line, too.
I know. Actually, Steve should just take over the show, and you and I should just retire.
Now, I can't talk for an hour by myself.
Yeah, that was the fate of the original Rantcore Pit that only lasted two episodes because it was just, you know, the more I thought about even just going back and listening to myself yammer away by myself, it was a sad thing indeed. So I decided instead to copy myself now there's just no rescuing that bad intro. Needless to say, we're going to talk about Star Wars. As we often said, it arrives on the scene out of nowhere and completely becomes a phenomenon overnight. So what do you do when you see a phenomenon? You're like, I want some phenomenon too.
Well, Hollywood being what they are, oh, that's selling. We're going to jump on that.
That's right.
The hot stuff right now.
I was surprised the same thing didn't happen with David Lynch's The Elephant Man. I was really expecting a lot more period, stories about tragic characters.
I think he was the only one.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
I went to go see
the
Victorian
age is otherwise depraved.
I went to go see The Elephant Man, and I thought it was going to be a superhero movie, and then I was really disappointed in the fact that it wasn't.
Elephant Man.
He has the strength of an elephant, and he likes peanuts.
And good memory.
Good memory.
Oh, here we go. Off track again. But yeah, Cole, you're right. You know, something hits big, and not just Hollywood, but everybody wants a piece of the action. No pun intended, Cole. But you know, you got the studios wanted to turn out something. You got the TV studios wanted to do something. The toy companies, even in a way, you had TV shows, variety shows that wanted Star Wars. You know, as part of their show somehow, you know, a la the Muppets or Donnie and Marie.
You know, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought
that
about
is true.
That.
The characters from Star Wars, especially the droids after the first film, appeared everywhere.
Yeah,
they got their feet put into the Grauman's Chinese Theater. I mean, it was just an amazing time.
And they were in blazing saddles where he lands on C-3PO's cement. No, wait, I'm sorry, that wasn't C-3PO. That was Errol Flynn.
Oh my God.
I don't think C-3PO had tiny feet. But yeah, and I think the easy thing was because you could get Anthony Daniels to suit up or just somebody else and get him to phone in his dialogue.
Exactly.
And then use a remote-controlled R2-D2.
Right.
Yeah.
Chances are Kenny Baker was sitting at home thinking, well, bloody hell, I'm not getting in on any of that action.
Yeah. And well, before they perfected the remote control R2 and Kenny Baker wasn't available, they usually just got, you know, a small child and, you know, labor laws and all that put it into that pretty quick.
Wow.
Well, they could have done like Battlestar Galactica and gotten a chimp.
That's true.
Oh, speaking of Me Toos. Battlestar
Galactica. Well, yeah, there's a good segue right there.
There you go.
Because almost immediately, and rather borrowing heavily, since John Dystra just sort of like, eh, so long, suckers. I got a lucrative television gig.
Yeah, yeah.
He immediately goes over to the Battlestar Galactica, because we're going to put a V in front of everything on this show. Including the Empire Strikes Back. But he goes over to Galactica, and not only does he, you know, jump on a show that is a Me Too, a lot of the designs are almost a Me Too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The look and feel of all the ships and the technology and everything, just it very well could have fit into the Star Wars universe.
Because I think Star Wars was one of the first ones to put fiddly bits all over everything.
That's true.
Yes.
Before Star Wars, a ship was usually very, very sleek, very, very, and look at the Enterprise, the original Enterprise.
Uh-huh.
There was no Aztec-ing or anything on it. It was a very sleek ship. You look at, and I guess Silent Running probably had, those ships had fiddly bits in it, but.
Space 1999 had a mix of fiddly bits and non-fiddly bits.
Right, right. But the Star Destroyer in Star Wars, you know, was nothing but fiddly bits. And so,
yeah, it was almost like that. If you got a close-up, you're expecting to see, like, little Starbucks and stuff, because in this space for rent.
Well, I totally misheard that, because I thought you meant Dirk Benedict.
Oh,
I did too. I did too for a second.
That was the big Me Too, is that the Starbucks coffee is actually based on Galactica, but then the whole Moby Dick thing was a feint.
So it was a Me Too of a Me Too.
And a miso.
Yeah. But yeah, Galactica, that was one of those that, you know, as a kid, when that came on TV, that's the first thing. And I guess they did their job well, because I immediately thought, Star Wars for TV. And
oh, yeah.
I didn't want to miss an episode. I had to get the figures, which, by the way, look at the figures. Styled just like the Kenner Star Wars figures. I mean, it was Me Too all around when it came
out. Oh, yeah, and they were deliberately bigger than the Kenner figures. It was like, suck it, Star Wars.
Were they really? Were they like exactly?
They were a tad bigger. They were much beefier, though.
Yeah, they were about a yard wide by comparison. They were about like 4 1/4 inches versus 3 3/4.
Oh, wow. Wow,
they were a little taller, and they had like
the worst figure of all time, the Imperious Leader.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
the face of a duck, a brain head, and just very unappealing body under a flowing robe.
Yeah, he really had the most frightening. It was like if Barbie let herself go.
Yeah. or Roswell. You know, the alien autopsy from Roswell.
Yes.
What it looked like.
Which ironically is the same, people get the same feeling.
Oh.
And I'm sure there are people who have that figure at home loose. They'll run over and pull up the little giraffe. They're like, oh my God, it is Barbie. The Clubfoot.
But the Cylons were awesome.
Yes, the Cylons were pretty well done. And if you mailed away another Me Too, or actually I don't know who was first, but almost certainly Kenner had the idea of the mail-away first, if you count the early bird set. But if you mailed away your proof of purchase seals, you could get a gold Cylon.
I do remember that. I do remember
that.
I've
got one somewhere.
Oh, yeah? Wow. Nice. Nice.
Plus, it came with the little gun and everything. And the only thing that was missing, and you kind of, I often forgot that the Cylons apparently carry a sword for no really good reason other than it just looked cool.
Right. With the action figure? Because I don't remember that.
No,
there wasn't a sword on the action figure, but the actual Cylons in, I think the only time we ever saw them with one was in the pilot.
Yeah, they may have dropped
the 3-hour pilot.
It was, you know, at some point when you're trying to turn in ranks with those swords hanging down, it gets a little like Three Stooges with a plank of wood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's kind of odd now that I think about it, because you had the good guys had the Egyptian motif going, and if you think about it, the Cylons kind of would resemble knights if they were carrying around swords and everything.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about it. The Egyptian motif was very obvious in the helmets of the colonials.
Yeah. I guess they were doing ancient astronauts before there was ancient astronauts.
And
you know
the
Greek
name.
Yeah.
Apollo.
Oh, yeah.
Cassiopeia.
That's right. And speaking of Me Toos and Battlestar Galactica, when I think of the old episodes, because I haven't really gone back and watched them recently, but what the one that always jumped to mind first are the Ice Planet episodes. I think the gun on Ice Planet Zero, I can't, something like that.
That sounds about right.
Yeah,
that's correct. I got the set for Christmas about 10 years ago, so I've rewatched them all pretty. And I think they're on Netflix streaming, too, so.
They could very well be. But I do remember thinking back how much that reminded me of the Hoth bit in Empire Strikes Back. But you know,
well, it actually predates Hoth.
Yeah, I was going to say, it almost have to have, but I was actually
Yeah, because Galactica was only on for a season. So it was only on, it started in 1978. And ended, you know, spring of 79. So it actually predates Hoth.
Was it that short of a time? Good night.
That's not counting Galactica 1980, which...
Yeah, 1980.
The less said about that, the better.
Yeah. There's a reason why that was 10 episodes or something of that one. Didn't make it very long.
And it was a good thing that, Well, you could argue that the Ice Planet Zero might have inspired the icy planet of Hoth. At least in the Star Wars universe, nobody ever went to heaven and their costume changed white.
Oh, gosh. See, now I got to go back and watch these episodes, because now you're all bringing back all these flashbacks of my childhood.
Now, how do you know the Qui-Gon robe didn't turn white?
Oh, that's true. He could have had, like, white Jedi robes.
Yeah.
In a cut scene.
Oh wow. Good night. Well, what other side from Galactica come to mind for you two guys?
Just one quick thing about Galactica as well.
Oh,
I still remember when it premiered, and I don't know if I talked about it with Cole at the time or not, but I was very upset about it because I felt it was a blatant Star Wars ripoff.
Uh-huh.
Going back and looking at it with, because that was a I was looking at it with an 11-year-old's eyes at that point. But now looking at it now, yes, it's science fiction, but there's really no story element other than, you know, the Cylons looking like stormtroopers, I guess, would be about the only element that... But there's really no other element that looks like, that feels to me like Star Wars.
Yeah, the only other comparison at the time, I remember seeing a magazine article and deciding I didn't want to invest in the magazine, but it was nice to read it at the grocery store. back then, and they were drawing comparisons with the models, like, you know, the Cylon Death Star, the Cylon Base Star, and the Death Star, the Colonial Viper being very reminiscent of the X-Wing,
mm-hmm.
in many respects, right down to the color scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to say the Cylon Raider was a bit Millennium Falcon-y, which I thought that was a bit of a stretch. I mean,
a bit.
You know, one was a flying hamburger, the other was more of a flying Pillsbury popover. But
it's a crescent roll.
Oh, of course. That shit was inside the suit for Lucifer. It was the Pillsbury Doughboy pulling the strings.
Oh, goodness.
Lemon from the oven! By your command.
That is wild. That is wild.
Okay, so Eddie, sorry. I didn't mean to throw us off. Back into Battlestar.
Battlestar Galactica is a great example because it was just literally hot on the heels. And in addition to being Star Wars on television, they actually released the pilot in theaters.
Yeah.
In Sensoround. Back when that was relevant for the 3 years.
Sensoround?
Sensoround. Sensoround was... Okay, you remember when they rolled out THX and everybody,
yeah.
I mean, apart from The Simpsons brilliantly lampooning that, you know, people are like, do we really need this? And I think the people who were like, do we really need this, were the people who remembered Sensoround and, the Dolby, and there were three or four others. It was where sound systems was a big deal.
Right. And the Sensoround was, I think they had multiple speakers throughout the, you know, in every vantage point throughout the theater was what it was supposed to be, or at least it was filmed.
Yeah, it was, I mean, just shy of having speakers under your seat so you could feel it through your ass.
Mm.
But, and the other thing was, I can't remember if it was Sensoround or one of the other ones, where it literally had this giant, like, concert speaker system just under the screen or just behind the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just throwing sound out at you.
Mm.
I remember going and seeing Buck Rogers, which also had a theatrical release of its pilot.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a Me Too.
That was actually on my list, too, with Buck Rogers.
Actually, but done by the same production company as Universal as well.
Oh,
and they, I think even, was Glenn Larson involved as well in that?
I had that same question. I was wondering.
Because, you know, it's with Buck Rogers, it was sort of, half, it was a Me Too in the sense that, okay, yeah, the door was now open.
Yeah.
Right.
Now,
of course, Buck Rogers is from the 30s.
Door. Yeah, yeah.
The original Buck Rogers and
everybody.
Flash Gordon, for that matter, are back.
Flash was a crush into Phrygia?
Yeah.
I know somebody's listening to this saying, all these idiots won't realize Buck Rogers has been around since the 30s.
Yes,
exactly.
Right.
That was rather my point.
Yeah, but there was a 1979 reboot before...
literally it said this is marketable.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the Flash Gordon movie did the same thing. Here's a property. Let's get the rights to it and let's go ahead and put it out as a new movie starring Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
Using football to
as the analogy. Let's get Queen to do the soundtrack.
Let's make a lot of really big mistakes to ensure we don't have to do another one.
Let's use paper mache wings for the Hawkmen.
Dive.
And oddly enough, it starred the guy who later went on to play Boss Nass.
Right.
Well, I can't help but think that that's not much of a jump in career. You know, the thing about Ryan Blessed is a wonderful actor and amazing.
Oh yeah.
Done some amazing, crazy stuff, but, you know, every now and again, it's just like somebody dangled a paycheck in front of him or something.
Uh-huh.
Why, I'm not doing anything that day. I'd be happy to come stand in the woods and you can cover me over with a cartoon frog.
Oh, wow. But yes.
Eddie, I think apparently you not only have done the homework here, but actually, unlike me, who did my homework weeks in advance and then didn't save it.
Mm-hmm. And I've long since forgotten it.
You might actually have some of this stuff handy.
There's one in particular that I actually look back fondly when I was a kid. But before I get to that, since Cole, you're talking about Star Wars kicking the doors wide open for Buck Rogers and Battlestar Galactica, since that door was kicked open and everybody wanted to jump on the bandwagon, let's talk about, and I want to get y'all's opinion, on Star Trek the Motion Picture and Black Hole.
Those are both good points because...
I mean, because neither one are so much a Me Too, and like, they're not ripping off Star Wars, but they're capitalizing on what's hot at the time and you know, they wanted to see what they could bring to the table. So
one of the things you see in the Black Hole, and that's Disney jumping in to the sci-fi realm.
Yeah.
They have two, or actually three, robots that play major roles in it. One's, you know, and the cute and cuddly robots,
uh-huh.
and then you've got an evil robot that takes the place of Darth Vader.
Yeah. Yeah, he always did kind of remind me of Vader in a way, just like a silent Vader, because he was very menacing looking and, you know, big in stature because he would float up high, not high, but, you know, float up, and it seemed like, if I remember correctly, there'd be a lot of camera angles that kind of shot him from down low looking up at him. So, yeah, in a way, he was kind of reminiscent of Darth Vader. And obviously, the two good droids were almost just, if you were to mesh the personality of a talking robot like C-3PO with the body of R2-D2.
Right, yeah, and squish it in and get Cornelius from Planet of the Apes to voice him.
Yeah. That's right, that's right.
With his counterpart, Major Kong from from Doctor Strangelove.
Oh.
Well, a robot could have a really good time in Paris with that. But yeah,
what can you mind?
Oh my gosh. It's wild.
Risky phrase book.
Or Maximilian, the evil robot, actually kills Norman Bates. So.
Oh, that's right.
Hey, that's so bad, I guess. Yeah, it's true.
Plus,
yeah.
Plus he had the Ben-Hur chariot wheel wrecking things built in.
Yeah. Well, it's a book slicer. I mean, it was intended as a book slicer.
Oh, yes. But, yeah, they did try. It was almost like Maximilian was Darth Vader and the Cylons had a child.
Yes. That's a good way of putting it.
And then he was named after the stars, one of the stars of the movie, Maximilian Schell.
Yeah.
Which made it even more confusing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I just remember that being very, it just really did seem like, oh, we got to rush our spacey movie out.
Mm-hmm.
While the iron's still hot.
Mm-hmm.
And what's kind of interesting, though, is the special effects in the black hole looked very cartoony. And I guess it's coming from Disney. I don't know if they animated some of that stuff or not, but it looks, the lasers that the robots fire.
Oh, yeah. The lasers were very...
They really did.
I actually have not...
The black hole itself, you know, looked like something that had been animated more so than a practical
effect. Actually,
what
they had found was it was a rift in Fantasia.
Yeah.
At any minute, the bald mountain demon would come out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bald's better than dancing hippos.
That's so true.
Yeah.
And racist centaurs.
Oh, God. But when I remember the black hole, and you're right, Cole, it's like everyone just had to get their product out as quickly as possible. I remember it being filled with kind of silly moments, like the shooting gallery scene. From what I remember, it was like one of the bad guys who, again, if you think about it, kind of were like black stormtroopers. And I don't mean like African-American stormtroopers. I mean like actual black-colored stormtroopers.
Yeah, like, they had the robots or I think like most of them were red, and then the one, the chief one was painted black because...
Okay, so that's what it was. They were red and the chief. Okay,
Mick Jagger got a hold of it.
But I remember
I see red droid and I want to
oh my gosh. But I remember there was a scene where one of the robots was doing they were like in a shooting gallery, and like you said, Steve, it's like the animation of the lasers was just really cheesy, and the way things like moved around looked really cheesy. So in that respect, yeah, it's almost like they cranked out something, they filled it with these goofy moments, you know, when and just got it out there.
Well, see, I have no doubt there were studios after Star Wars hit, and it stayed in the theaters for months.
Yeah.
Months. I know studios were calling people saying, hey, you know that sci-fi script you had? What is it? We need to get it on. I don't care what it is. I don't care if the ending doesn't work. Let's put it on.
Yeah, exactly. No polishing involved, no rewrites, just cranking
it. Yeah, really, is the script done? Who cares? Let's get on this.
Yeah, we'll finish
it up. Hot.
Yeah.
That's right. I don't need it good. I need it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Yeah.
I think became Star Trek the Motion Picture rather than Star Trek Phase 2, another TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe that had been in development for a little while, and then it was hyper accelerated with the success of Star Wars, and Paramount said, okay, me too, let's get this one into the theaters. And that came out in, I guess, Christmas of 79, so they
and
took a while
to get
those special effects of V'ger going in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they wanted to one-up Disney on really dull face-based special effects. But they also wanted to have the sensibility of having Queen doing the soundtrack, so you got all those great guitar riffs.
True.
Oh, and 30 minutes of us of a flyover of the Enterprise.
with waving crewmen in their little spacesuit.
Who also continued to wave all the way into Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan 3 years later.
That was their job. It's one thing I do on this space station is I wave.
Maybe y'all can answer this question, because I've sat through the motion Star Trek, the motion picture, a couple of times in my life. Were there any alien species in it at all?
They had a couple so that they could make figures of them.
Oh, that's right, at the academy or at the headquarters.
Okay.
Yeah, well, and in the big room when Kirk calls them all together to watch Epsilon 9 go bye-bye.
Yeah.
They had a Betelgeusean.
Yeah, they had a melty face, the Arcturian.
I can't remember.
Rigelian.
Yes, a Rigelian and a Betelgeusean.
So basically,
has a penis shaped head.
Wow.
There's an article about that on the United States of Geek, in which I will try to remember to link from here, because it's amazing to me that not only did they have a penis shaped head in the movie.
Uh-huh.
Actually got made into an action figure, which was also featured in a costume book. So mom could make you Star Trek costumes.
You're kidding.
Of penis-head aliens. So we will certainly have a link to that.
Wow, definitely. No, I'm only asking. So they were basically scenery, basically. Because the reason why I'm asking...
Yeah, there was... Well, of course, the crew was already set. And Ilea was ostensibly an alien. She was from Delta. Delta 5 or whatever it is, and gave off sexual pheromones. But
it's always a good idea to put somebody like that on your crew full of men.
Yeah, absolutely. But what was kind of silly was that they had already established two alien races that they could have thrown in somewhere. The Andorians Tellarites,
yes. They could have easily put it, or they could have even gone so far as to have those diminutive gold guys. And I think both of those would have been far more interesting than, penis alien.
I remember getting really excited seeing the third one in the theater and actually getting something that resembled like a cantina scene. And like actual, you saw something that actually had aliens that, they put some work into.
What's interesting is... For a lot of these Me Toos, they always try to have that scene. They always try to recreate the cantina scene. Star Trek and Motion Picture didn't, but Battlestar Galactica did. They had a casino scene with eyes and two lips.
Oh, those things freaked me out. I remember those things creeped me out when I was a kid.
Yeah, they're supposed to be like these android. In fact, they were called the Android Sisters.
Goofy.
I have no idea.
I mean, not in the show itself, but later on you would see things where they would be referred to that way.
They
had the good sense not to just jump out and say, "And ladies and gentlemen, here you have for your listening pleasure, the Android Hussars." I don't know why I'm talking like I can't remove my lips. But.
And I believe even Buck Rogers had a scene like that with with the dancing or...
And also, while you're on the subject of Buck Rogers and Star Wars, certainly Buck Rogers was highly influenced by Empire in the episode featuring Eberhausen.
Okay, you'll have to remind me of that one.
It was like this whole... It was after they brought in... In the very episode where they brought in Hawk. I am Hawk.
Oh, I loved Hawk.
Last of my kind.
No. Yeah. The second season was so much...
But they had this episode where... They had this quest on this planet, and they were sort of... It's been... naturally, I've only seen it when it aired, but...
Is this the one with the little blue guy?
The one with the little blue guy.
Oh, that's my favorite! That's my favorite episode!
Yeah, it was actually one of the coolest episodes going on.
Yes!
But at the same time, it was kind of silly and such a rip-off of Empire.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure looking back, if I were to watch it today, it probably would be. But I remember it was so exciting. Because like you said, they were in that mountain, right? And they were going through caverns. And it was cool. To me, it was like, and then you had this little goofy Lucky Charms blue guy popping up every so often.
Lucky Charms.
But I would love to see that episode again. I'm sure it's going to, you know, fall short of what I remember it being, but, you know, oh well.
Cherish your memories while you can.
I really enjoy, I think your memory will be much better. Because I remember loving the first season of Buck Rogers, and then the second season, they retooled it and put it on a starship and basically tried to turn it into Star Trek.
Oh, that's right, yes.
They had a captain, and they had, for some reason, an old gentleman that was dressed in 20th century clothes.
Yeah, they had that anachronist.
Yeah.
It was like a member of the 25th century SCA. Well, Buck, that club dresses up in cardigan sweaters from the distant past, and we pretend like it's 1985.
We call it LARPing.
Nice, nice.
Me generation, wee!
But they also had another, they added another robot other than Tweaky and Dr. Hewer. They changed
the
voice because the most ridiculous robot ever had arms that all they could do was go onto his waist and then down again. That's all his arms.
All he could do was to pose disapprovingly.
What was this character's name called?
It was the precursor to Dale from Walking Dead, who disapproved of everything. The robot's name was Crichton.
You know, I never realized this, but I always figured I always figured Marvin the robot from
The Paranoid Android
looked like Crichton because of that. Whenever I was reading the books.
Oh, you kind of imagine that's what Marvin would look like.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I remember. I just Googled it. I remember this robot now. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it made those little binocular head droids from Star Wars look useful.
Yeah.
You know,
yes,
with binoculars on top and a couple little arms coming out.
That's exactly what it looks. It reminds me of. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, those guys are like fifth generation Crichton.
Mm-hmm. I remember the Buck Roger ships kind of remind me of the snow speeders. Now, which one would have come first?
Well, no, because Buck Rogers, the movie, actually was released theatrically, Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, in 1979.
Oh,
really?
That's right.
I wonder if they had spies on Lucasfilm set, because they look a lot alike if you think about it.
Well, it's probably on the Norwegian film crew was friends with somebody in Hollywood. Oh, you wouldn't believe what they got. I don't know why he sounded Italian.
Is that your real?
You wouldn't believe it.
You sound like Watto.
I've got a cool story. In 86, we went on a family vacation to Universal Studios in Hollywood. And there, on the tour, they took you, you know, you see all this behind-the-scenes stuff. That the tour is basically just a ride. But at that time, you actually could see things that were being worked on. And I saw rotting in the back an old Buck Rogers starship, the Starfighter.
Oh wow!
And it was plywood.
Yeah.
All paint had come off of it. It was just sitting and rotting in the back of in a back lot at Universal Studios. It was really kind of cool. I was like, whoa!
Nice.
And of course, you're feeling like, you know, if I had somewhere to put it, I would buy that for a very cheap price.
Yes.
No, yeah. Just last year, they finished restoring the original Galileo.
Yes.
And I've seen pictures of what was left of it, and what you're describing kind of has that feel where you're just sort of like, I'm done with it.
Yep. You know, I'd really like an original Viper. That would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, now that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Some other films I remember, of course, 1978, I believe it was, brought us Battle Beyond the Stars.
Oh, yes.
That felt very Star Wars-esque.
Of course, it was Roger Corman.
Yeah.
So to accuse Roger Corman of not stealing something would be an insult. Because he's going to jump on every bandwagon he can.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, Richard Thomas as the, you know, good night, Luke Skywalker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't they release that the exact same year as Empire?
I'm serious. I'm going to go on record here because Richard Thomas, God bless him, has been in movies and television forever, since before I was born, probably.
Uh-huh.
And his mole actually started even before that. And the only thing I have ever liked Richard Thomas in was The Americans on FX, which if you haven't seen it, you ought to, because it's freaking amazing. But, like, you know, the sad thing is it took him, like, 45 years to get to the point where I like him in anything.
Well, I'm sure he was worried about that.
Well, you know it. You know, on the one hand, you can't go wrong with a mix of Richard Thomas and George Peppard. But on the other hand, you can. And that is called Battle Beyond the Stars. And this one does exactly, I think we talked about this on Force Fails a bit, or I'm sorry, on May the Force Be With You Always, the follow-up, is the biggest strength and the thing that all the Me Too has sort of forgot. We're kind of midway through. This is the thing we should be wrapping up on, but I blew the opening, so who cares? But, you know, none of the Me Too seem to catch the most brilliant thing about Star Wars is it had nothing to do with Earth.
Yes.
And nobody could seem to get away from Earth. They felt like, you know, great idea, George Lucas, with your phenomenal overnight success. It's going to be in the theaters forever. But you screwed up on one thing. You took it away from Earth.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to get you.
Yeah.
Or I guess was there. That's my apocryphal version of their thinking.
That's going to get you. I know you're the highest grossing like movie that. Of all time, but it's going to get you.
It's going to get you.
But you're right. You know, even Battlestar Galactica, which didn't need it, added Earth 2 as a class.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I don't know. Of course, I don't know all movies, but Star Wars is one of the only ones I can think of that's a science fiction movie that doesn't revolve around Earth.
In fact, to the point where, you know, and it's not the future. That was the other thing is, it's the past, which is one of the most, I mean, those were the two greatest strengths, and everything else is, this is in the far-flung future.
Yeah.
You get things like, you know, and well into the 80s, I think, you know, Empire and Jedi said, allowed people to say, let's keep trying to take a swing at this.
Yeah.
Because you've got, was it 1978 was Star Crash, which is like if Hooters was to do Star Wars.
I've heard tell of Star Crash.
Yes, it's, was it Carolyn Monroe was the actress's name?
Oh, is this the one that had the Playmate or something? Or
No, we'll get to that in a second, yeah.
Oh, okay.
This was pretty much just, like I said, it's like, kind of how, was it Starbucks was financing some films for a while there?
Yeah.
They did the movie, the critically acclaimed Akima and the Bee.
Yeah. Oh.
And it was sort of like if back in the 70s, if Hooters was around and the corporations were financing films, this would have been Hooters' answer. Because it's basically Carolyn Monroe as Hooters Han Solo in the all, you know, in versus the girls from Twin Peaks.
Who's in that one? Because I think I'm sure I've heard of this.
Christopher Plummer is in it. David Hasselhoff.
Oh, this is the one with the Hoff.
It is the one with the Hoff.
Okay. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Oh, man. If only I could forget it now. Yeah, but like, if I remember correctly, they at least on the DVD art or the video box art, there was a lightsaber, someone holding like a lightsaber type thing. I don't know if that...
There was always a lightsaber type
thing. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I hadn't seen that much bare midriff since Dr. Goldfoot and the Bikini Machine.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, now the whole Hooters thing. Yes, I gotcha. We're on the same page now.
Okay.
And, the bad guy was... The bad guy or bad guys, I can't remember... Didn't they brandish, like, space six-shooters or something?
They may have. I mean, I actively avoided a lot of these because it was just painfully obvious.
What they
were trying to do.
I feel like they were doing, like, the John Woo one gun in each hand type thing, you know. But, oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah, the Barbarella girl chick, I guess she was supposed to be Barbarella or something.
Yeah, I think she's like Barbarella and Han Solo's daughter.
Okay, yeah. I think that's about all I want to say about Star Crash.
Yeah, I've never actually seen it. This is the first I've ever heard of it, I think. You know, I may have seen it tangentially, but I never have watched it.
Yeah, I remember seeing commercials for it, and these just off, you know, Sid and Marty Krofft level animated robots.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Gotta have the robots.
Yeah.
I've only seen clips of it on YouTube, but that's about as far as I got.
And kind of looking over the ripoffs and the Me Toos, it seems like 1980 with The Empire Strikes Back, almost nobody was doing anything in film.
Uh-huh.
They waited for Jedi to start trying to be a Me Too again.
Oh, really?
I mean, there was apparently a film, I remember seeing it advertised, Message from Space,
mm-hmm.
which was released in the States in 78, which is apparently a Japanese film that was Akira Kurosawa's Star Wars.
Oh.
And of course, we didn't mention Jason of Star Command on television.
I was thinking
Star Command.
That was the love child of Star Wars and Star Trek.
Yeah, I was wondering who was going to bring that up first. Jason of Star Command. Yeah,
and it had robots.
And James Doohan.
Cute little robots.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, this one, and probably looking back on it now, I was speaking of this earlier during the warm-up, but as a kid, I went to go see this movie because from the preview or commercials, I immediately thought this is another Star Wars, and that was Space Hunter, Adventures in the Forbidden Zone. Now, I have not seen this movie since the 80s, so I'm sure if I were to go back and watch it now, it's probably horrible. But from what I do remember about it, it had Peter Strauss as the Han Solo-type character, and Molly Ringwald, of all people, as his, not so much sidekick, but she was like the tag-along. I guess if it was Dark Knight Returns, she would be Keely Kelly, Robin. But thinking about it now, it's probably more of a ripoff of The Road Warrior than it is Star Wars. But I did remember going to see it specifically because the way they were promoting the movie and like the font of on the movie poster and you know, and the, of course, the lasers and all that. They were really trying to promote it as a Star Wars type movie. But I'd be curious to go back and revisit that one to see see how bad it is. But yeah, Peter Strauss, Ernie Hudson was in it. Gosh, who else? But yeah, I think that'd be another one where if I were to go see it again, it'd probably be a big disappointment and not as exciting. One thing I did remember about them though, they had these really cool. They were motorcycles. And they were like encased in almost like a hamster ball type thing, but not, but they were narrow, like narrow things. So when they would drive the motorcycles, the cage thing that they were in would roll too. And what's so weird is thinking about it now, I realize Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith, the thing that Grievous rides in.
They're ripping that off.
Yes. And I'm thinking, George Lucas is ripping off Space Hunter.
Well, that actually ripped off the Thunderbolt Grease Slapper.
Oh yes.
Oh, wow.
There's from Tom Flick, who actually, they converted the Thunderbolt Grease Slapper into a giant wheel at one point.
Well, it's little wonder since you had the pod race, which was basically a rip-off of the Wacky Races.
Yeah,
I was just expecting the Sly Brothers to be in the lineup.
Oh my gosh, Cole, that's genius because of all the goofy little
pod
race aliens. They're so cartoon.
You wanted like Sarge and his little tank mobile, Ed Barron. And
they're so cartoony. That's exactly
and Big Face Baby. Oh, wait, that was episode one.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow, that's genius.
And going back to your asking about the Playmate one, that, I stand corrected. Looking back, it was probably the only thing that came out the same year as Empire.
Uh-huh.
It was a Star Wars. I wouldn't go as far as to label it a ripoff, as certainly just like, well, we can pretty much, you know, let's do a parody, a spoof that isn't necessarily, you know, where Spaceballs tried to parody everything about the genre. Because that was the point in Mel Brooks' career where it was just, it was sort of like, well, it worked with High Anxiety, so let's, you know, do a full-on spoof of the genre. Galaxina, the one you're talking about here, which is now, what, 35 years old, and frightening to think about that. But Yeah, Galaxina was released in 1980, starred former Playboy playmate Dorothy Stratton, who later got murdered and inspired a movie, Star 80, in case anybody wants to...
Oh, is that her?
Star 80 is about the life and murder of Dorothy Stratton.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I'd almost be keen to see if they have any coverage of her doing Galaxina.
Because I'm probably wrong, but wasn't she murdered shortly after she did Galaxina?
I believe so. I'm not 100% certain, but
I'm not saying there's a connection. But
no,
you never know.
I'm sure she was murdered first by the critics and then by her husband.
That's horrible.
Wow.
Distance.
But yeah, the thing that it was that Galaxina is actually a fun guilty pleasure movie of mine because I discovered it probably about 1983 or 84. And it's stupid and funny, and it pokes a lot of fun at different aspects. There's some, you know, little winks to Alien, to Star Trek, to Star Wars, to pretty much anything.
Yeah.
But it's mainly, you know, it isn't really so much a ripoff because it does its own thing more than it doesn't.
Okay, okay.
Plus, it's got Avery Schreiber, so I won't go so far. You know, I won't say you've got no complaints, but... You know,
TV's Mario?
No, you're thinking of Captain Lou Albender or whatever his name
is. Lou Albano.
I get them confused.
John Logan.
If you were like had a police lineup with Avery Shriver, Captain Lou Albano, Super Mario, and I think there's at least one other. Like Chef,
who's the old movie critic on the Today Show?
Gene Shalit. Yes.
They were all convicted.
And you could throw in Boss Nass for fun.
I wasn't doing anything that week. Of course I'll be in your lineup.
No, not Brian Blessed. I mean, actually, Boss Nass.
Like Boss Nass with a Jules Winfield wig or what? You kind of have to have the curly fro going on to fit in this line.
It's 70s week on the booth.
But I would tell you, watch Galaxina for Dorothy Stratton's terrible acting.
Oh, wow.
And just because it's fun to watch. It's silly. It's stupid. It very much, you can tell it's an 80s film.
Wow. Probably the only thing that would have made it better is if they had put David Hasselhoff in that one instead of the other one.
That's so true.
This is a free Knight Rider.
Oh, that's true, yes. And then, of course, you've got 1984's The Last Starfighter, which brings us right back to where? To Earth.
Yes.
And even Galaxina had Earth connections.
I love Last Starfighter, but yeah, definitely.
I do too.
Definitely.
I enjoyed it in the theater. It was one of the first, you know, using almost completely computer-generated graphics.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And it was War Games meets Star Wars.
Yeah. War Games
meets
Star Wars.
Because the lead character is basically a low-rent Matthew Broderick, back when Matthew Broderick was low-rent himself, relatively speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Before
got a robot in it.
And a robot, yes. And it had space aliens.
Space aliens. And Robert Preston is a space alien.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to go back to Space Center real quick because they also had hang gliders, which was a big deal back then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Did they crash into the electrical lines?
I really look back on Last Starfighter as with a lot of just boy joy, and that's not in a nasty way.
What you do with Last Starfighter is different business.
I mean, when I was a boy, I got much
joy.
We
do not judge.
Yeah, man, I just remember how much fun it was, and still is, to watch that movie. It's just fun. And I didn't realize until years later that the director was Nick Castle, who played the original Michael Myers, or actually played the Shape in the original Halloween. So I thought, I didn't find that out until, I guess, when it came out on DVD or maybe Blu-ray even. So I thought, that's kind of a neat little tidbit about it.
Plus, you're probably the only person who enjoyed that.
Oh, come on. I'm sure there's others.
The tidbit or the last part?
What's that?
I enjoyed The Last Starfighter, Cole.
See? There you go.
I actually remember, I think Steve and I may have gone
through that. We probably went to see it together.
Yes. Also at the time, in their time, it was kind of neat to see that much going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because Star Wars was influencing not only that, there were sword and sorcery, like made-for-TV movies and stuff, that had such a Star Wars vibe.
One that
winds up on a lot of lists is something called Hawk the Slayer.
Oh, the Han Solo ripoff, dude?
Yes. It's basically a sword and sorcery thing with a guy dressed like Han Solo.
Yeah, it's not... Yeah, the story itself is not so much Star Wars. It's more of a fantasy, but the character is so much a Han Solo ripoff.
Well, the thing about it is, if you want to see sword and sorcery doing Star Wars, you need to go no further than Willow.
Oh, I was going to say Krull.
I was going to say Thundar the Barbarian.
Lord of Light!
I mean, he had a laser sword.
Yeah.
He had a Wookiee-esque...
That's true. He had
Mock, the Mock, or whatever.
Or Kukla Fran and Ollie. I can't remember what. Kukla the Fran and Ollie. And a little laser for her wielding chick.
Yeah.
As you remember, Leia was the originator of laser for her.
But yeah, Hawk the Slayer. We can't move on from Hawk the Slayer without pointing out the fact that it stars one of Hollywood's all-time greats, and that's Jack Palance.
Ah, yes.
Yes, yes.
Jack Palance's career
is my number one guy.
There you go. There you go.
It makes me look more evil. Believe it. Or not.
We can't ever bring up Jack Palance without doing his bit from Batman.
You, I'm my number one guy, and I'm going to pass out from hyperventilation.
Oh, shoot. Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
What are some other notables? I mean, certainly there were toy ripoffs. We mentioned that we wanted to touch on toys as well as television and film.
You know, there's some that I would probably have considered ripoffs at the time as a kid because wasn't really versed in it. But like, I certainly bought Micronauts thinking they were neat, cool space toys. But of course, they probably predated Star Wars in Japan.
Yes, in fact, they did. Really, but the interesting thing is,
I wonder if they would have ever come to the American market if it hadn't been for Star Wars.
Precisely, I was going to say, in much the same way that Star Trek: The Motion Picture became the motion picture. The Micronauts came to this country because some Mego wanted a Me Too.
Uh-huh. That's
before they started making action figures of penis-headed aliens to peddle to kids. See what this
is? And the Shogun Warriors. I know they were giant robots, but...
But they weren't into stunts. They were proud of being robots.
Oh, God.
But there's robots.
Yeah. And they very much
came
to this country for the same reason, I think, is... That, you know, here was something that the American toy company, in this case Mattel, could go over to Japan. And the same is actually true of the Transformers and the GoBots. Because we talked about in the USG one time about the Transformers, someone who knew way more than they should. Apparently, the Transformers was cobbled together from three different toy lines.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And that's why a lot of the Transformers, for those who collected them, I've seen enough of them to think, oh, yeah, you know, that's funny. That would be the case.
It is.
That... You know, they seem a little disjointed sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, why would one, you know, why does this one work so well and transform so cool,
mm-hmm.
and this one's kind of dull and barely does anything, and this one's a raccoon?
Yeah. Well, you had...
This one is a tape cassette player, and the other one's a car.
Yeah.
Which one is more fun to play with when it's not a robot?
And that's the thing. The spectrum was so wide. You had some that were literally as simple as you turn the car upright, you pull out the arms and legs, pop the head up, and it's a Transformer. Then you had Jetfire, I think it was, who that was the one that was basically a Robotech fighter.
They were practically Rubik's Cube to figure out how to...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've got a 10-year-old, and we got a one of the new Transformers, and I swear I needed a degree in physics to get that one.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
I was telling my son, I was like, I don't know why this is so hard. When I had them when I was in high school, they were a lot easier.
Oh my gosh! But as far as Star Wars, and Cole, I hope you don't mind if this episode starts to go a little long, because the Star Wars toy Me Toos, is that's what I want to get into, because this is where I start to get excited. Let's start, if you don't mind, with a conversation we had not too long ago about the Galaxy Laser Team. You want to take
this one? Oh, yes.
And Steve, if you know about this, please feel free to jump in, because the Galaxy Laser Team is awesome.
Now, Steve may not recognize that by name, but you probably will remember.
It's like the Mexican Star
No,
Wars.
This, the Galaxy Laser Team
No, that was
the Army guys.
The Mexican Star Wars was Obi-Wan Kenobi J-A-U-N.
It was not Obi-Wan Kenobi. It was not Star Wars.
Star Juarez.
Star Juarez.
I like that.
We went there. So that whatever the hell, Galaxy Laser Jam.
Galaxy Laser Team. They also went by a different name, but it escapes me at the moment.
Those were the solid plastic figurines.
Yeah.
That came in two scales.
That's right.
There were a couple of robots. A hero, a guy with a laser bat, a helmeted guy that looked like Darth Vader, and the Phantom of the Paradise's love child.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who like obscure De Palma films, a crab turtle.
Yeah, Gamera. I like to think it's Gamera.
It's Gamera's son he doesn't like to talk about. And yeah. A Chewbacca.
Gamera.
And Macquarie Chewbacca with Bebop.
It literally Dealey is Bopper. The Macquarie Chewbacca.
It almost. Is. It's the Macquarie Chewbacca with Dealey Bopper antenna.
Yeah, antennas.
Wow.
Ears. And there's a space princess, Cole. No, space princess. There's a space princess that is like standing in like a computer console. The robot is like a little R2 unit. It's literally got R2-D2's legs, but it's a box.
It's a mailbox. They got the That's where the Postal Service got the idea for those R2-D2 mailboxes.
Yeah, and the bad guy who's supposed to be Darth Vader, who has like a laser bat.
Yeah,
looking back on it now, it's more like Judge Dredd, if Judge Dredd were a Skrull.
I think it's Judge Dredd Al Capone talking to his lieutenants.
Yeah, yeah.
Baseball.
But it's he's got like a Judge Dredd helmet, but if I remember correctly, he's got like a bumpy chin like a Skrull. And
he may have.
And the fighters were basically F-16s, but with X-wing.
Yes, they were the X-wing F-16s.
Yeah, yeah. There was an F-16, but they had four wings, and they were like an X-wing. And then they got really cheesy, and they went to the other end of the spectrum, and they had a couple of figures that were literally just astronauts. Like, one was carrying like a metal detector type thing, and one was carrying like a lunchbox or something. And then they had, of course, the I guess it was supposed to be like the main hero guy was basically like an old school Buck Rogers looking character. So yeah, it was really weird, some of the things that they came up with for this thing.
But yeah, there were no shortage of Mexican and other foreign ripoff figures, and that went straight through to episode one at least.
Oh yeah.
And I guess that even the knockoffs took a bath on episode one. Because you never saw episode two and three ripoffs.
Yeah, I own a small collection of the ripoffs of the Star Wars figures.
You got a great, a fairly like 7 or 8 inch tall Sturmtrooper.
Yes. If you've seen me at the conventions, he often goes with me. It's my Galactic War Vet, and it's basically like a 9 inch Mexican Stormtrooper, which is actually Han Solo in disguise. The helmet comes off, and it's got Han Solo underneath.
Nice.
And I'll usually put out a cup for change for tips, and I'll hang a cardboard sign around his neck that says, "Galactic War Vet will work for food," or something like that. But yeah, there's a
and
lot of
I think
of
Eddie has one. I've got one of the Galactic Empire figures.
Yeah, Galaxy Empire.
Galaxy Empire.
With an
actual picture of the Millennium Falcon on the packaging.
And Star Destroyer.
Wow.
And Star Destroyer,
Two Star Destroyers, if I'm not mistaken. And the two I have, I know, Cole, you have the Chewbacca in disguise. Is that right?
No, actually, I have just the regular Chewbacca, except that for some reason they decided Chewbacca was sort of this purpley-gray color.
I have to get mine out, but I'm pretty sure mine is the Shadows of the Empire Chewbacca. But this is the epic thing about it.
I think it's supposed to be Itchy from the Hollow special.
Is that what it is? Is that what, I don't want to know what's in his right hand then. Never mind.
Wow.
But, so not only is it bad enough that it's a purple Chewbacca in disguise, but, and it's in the package still, one of the legs is broken off. So that just adds to the epicness of how cheesy these things are. And to mirror it, I got the Han Solo one too. But they apparently made a Stormtrooper, they made a Boba Fett, and apparently the collectors go crazy trying to track down a whole set of these things.
Oh, I imagine.
But,
and there were a lot of other, just attempts at, your cheesy grocery store toy aisle type toys.
Yes.
Right.
You would always see, Kmart's cheap aisle would have some bag set or a carded thing of some sort of Mickey spaceship and his...
It's Johnny Spaceman.
Johnny Spaceman and his galaxy crew or something like that. There would be some lizard guy.
I want to bring up this line. I'm seeing if this rings a bell to y'all. They were called the Staroids, Starroid, like in steroid, but it's Staroids. And
that almost sounds like something you don't want to get.
That's what you get from flying your X-Wing for too long.
That's right, yeah. By the time Luke got to Dagobah, he had a bad case of the Staroids.
But yeah, there were the Staroid Raiders, which were basically the Star Wars scale figures. And then there were some that were, I don't know if they were the same size, but they were like motorized. So those are kind of cheesy. But the Raiders, the Staroid Raiders were really cool. And by cool, I mean really cheesy and horrible. But they made, you have to, Google these. They made one that were, the head looks like it could be a Cylon head stuck on maybe a Death Star commander body with a Darth Vader chest plate. And they're crazy. There's one that has, it's like a robot, but it's got the head of Yoda. But these are not knockoffs. These are actually licensed toys. I can't remember who made them. There's one that looks like Frogger. There's one that looks like a Japanese mech robot. Oh, and you'll like this, Cole. What I can remember, there was one that had like a big fish head. So I don't know if they were trying to. If they had a trap. Yeah, if they had an Akbar before there was an Akbar, I'm not sure. But I can't remember what company made it, but I'm sure you can. You can Google Staroid.
And there was one I remember seeing in catalog, like Sears catalog or something. Uh-huh. It's Star Team.
Yes. Okay. Let me think about this for a second, because there's one.
It was an anagram. I don't know what it stood for, but there was a squat little robot.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
A little dome and arms, and then there was a bipedal robot in silver with an inexplicably green head.
Yes, it was a C-3PO silver body. At first glance, you think it was like an alien head, but when you look closer, it's a green robotic head.
Yeah.
And then you got your
black mask and helmet, cape.
Of course.
Like Skunk Vader, because he's got a fish like stripe.
I know, it's so bizarre, because... Oh,
apparently, I found it, he's apparently called the Knight of Darkness.
It is. It was the Knight of Darkness, not to be confused with the Dark Side.
The Dark Knight.
Yeah. But, the Darth Vader character is so bizarre, because he's got, this round helmet, and it looks almost like the troopers from Spaceballs, almost,
yeah.
But it's black instead of white.
And a personal favorite of mine back in the day, it was a company that just fielded a carrying case for your 3 3/4 inch
actors
under the name Star World.
Yes, I'm
with a drag queen Vader. astronaut.
Yes.
And yeah. Robots.
Uh-huh. And there was like their version of Chewbacca on the packaging was, looked more like a baboon or something.
Yeah, like it was like Beastman from He-Man.
Yes, yes.
And certainly you have to say that the success of the Star Wars figure format also inspired Hasbro to bring out the bring G.I. Joe out.
Uh-huh.
As a 3 3/4 inch line.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they really, early on, they didn't quite catch on to what, you know, they really hadn't quite caught the lightning in a bottle that they would later.
Uh-huh.
Because most of the characters were kind of plain. You know, they had specialties, like artillery or what have you. But for the most part, they didn't have any distinctive character to them.
Oh, no, no.
Except for Scarlet and maybe like Roadblock. And then suddenly they realized we need to really punch this up. And then it went nuts. It got to the point where we have Ice Cream Soldier.
Yeah, well, that's a different story. But yeah, that first set of G.I. Joes, the most distinct ones were Scarlet and Snake Eyes. Roadblock didn't even come until later.
That's right, Snake Eyes.
Snake Eyes and Scarlet, but everybody else was basically, you had, a lot of them shared the same head. There was almost like just two heads. One was used for, like, Clutch, Rock and Roll. The other one was used for, like, Grunt.
So Rock and Roll had a beard and would later appear in Return of the Jedi.
Gosh.
As a rebel soldier on Endor.
Oh, gosh. But, yeah, those first line of G.I. Joes, they had, like, a lot of them shared the same head sculpts. A lot of them shared same body sculpt, so it wasn't as exciting as what came with the second and third sets.
Of course, I think Steve had one of these Starhawks.
Oh, yes!
The
I totally forgot about
it. Yeah, it was sort of like the Y-Wing and the X-Wing had a baby. And it was
the Enterprise?
And the Enterprise. And it would go...
Or no, an Eagle. An Eagle from space.
Oh,
back in
yeah. It was like every...
The head was... It was, yeah, it was a really cool, it was Milton Bradley, I believe, it was their first foray into toys rather than games.
Uh-huh.
And it was this really cool thing, you could, when you tilted it up, the engine whine continued to build up, then if you tilted it down, it would go down. And it had laser sound, and it was the best sounding lasers, because at the time, the Star Wars toys, their laser sounds were...
Yeah, it was like a Black & Decker grill.
So this one, you'd push the button, and it'd make nice laser sounds. I loved that toy. Thanks, Cole.
That was a cool... And that was at the time when, like, an electronic toy that did that...
Yeah.
...was freaking awesome.
Wow. And what's it called again? Star what?
Starhawk.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't heard of that one. Wow, that's pretty cool.
Now, look up Starhawk, because that was a pretty interesting thing. Well, we probably ought to go ahead and wind down. There's undoubtedly things. There's something I keep forgetting and remembering and forgetting and remembering.
Oh, before we close, I got to bring this up because this is something I brought in a private conversation, and I actually found it just today, Cole. Do you remember we were talking when we first talked about doing this episode? I talked about remembering way back seeing photos in a magazine that my mom had where a knockoff space station that you could use for your Star Wars figures, and I remember thinking this thing, from, of course, being years and years later. I remember this playset being giant. I remember there being platforms for your X-Wings to land on. I remember there being, like, elevators and all sorts of levels to it. And I, for years, I've tried to look up to see what this was because I knew it existed. I remember seeing it in this magazine that my mom had. I was thinking it was like a catalog that she had. I found it today, just in time.
Oh,
wow.
Episode. You found the magazine?
Yes! No, this is what it is. This is what it is. It was called Outer Space Station, and what it was a directions and basically building blueprints to build your own space station for your Star Wars figures, and it was in the November 1978 issue of Woman's Day magazine.
Oh, you know, it's funny you mention that. There was a magazine my mom had that she showed me. Oh, look. Here, back when the Empire figures were coming out, and it was a similar sort of thing where you could build like a little Hoth playset with foam.
That was, Yes, that was also Woman's Day magazine. They repeated it in 1980 for Empire. And so I finally found pictures. So if you have a chance to Google, you know, Star Wars Station, Woman's Day magazine, whatever, it's amazing. I doubt you can build this with any kind of ease, but I saw the picture finally. I was like, oh my gosh, that's it. You know, it was like a blast from the past. It's so cool because it's got all these steps and levels and elevators and I swear I'm going to try to build this one day. I'm going to find the blueprints online and try to build this.
Colleen will be thrilled.
Yes, I'm
sure. Yes, I have found the outer space. That is that's impressive,
isn't it? But yeah,
really quick. The name of that toy, by the way, Cole, was Starbird.
Starbird. Okay, Starbird. So I was right. Starbird.
Yeah, you were right.
I thought it was, and Hawk sounded so much better. You should never have heard it.
It sounds a little bit more menacing, yeah.
I do have to point out before we close something that I very nearly forgot, and this is very important that I bring this up because of our guest, because Steve will understand and appreciate this. The most blatant ripoff of Star Wars ever. Star Worlds.
Oh, yes. That's right. We were going to talk about this.
I promised to talk about Star Wars. We'll probably just have to have Steve back on and do a special on
it. You Han Novatech?
With Han Novatech.
Wait, what?
Han Novatech? Oh, yeah, I kept a lot of this from Eddie.
Yeah, because I told him, I was like, don't tell me this until we get on air. Oh, my gosh. First thing we talked about.
Actually, just really quick, one of the ways Cole and I met is he actually asked me to write the script for Star World.
Before I found my footing as a writer,
oh my God! I love
to.
You, Steve, and we're both on the same school bus and everything. And I kind of a way of like approaching him was like, "Oh, I'm working on this movie."
Oh my God!
Because I had a Super 8 camera, or at the time probably just an 8mm camera, and I had this idea for a movie called Star Worlds.
Oh my God!
And I think what would typify the original script of Star Worlds, which I wish I still had. If I'm remembering this correctly, Steve, cut to.
Yeah, cut to. I mean, basically, one each scene was one page, and I felt I needed to cut to something else because that was getting boring.
Oh, my God.
The name of Han Novatech and Nafit Yen's ship. And yes, Nafit Yen was basically going to be, I think I was going to play Nafit Yen.
Yeah, of course.
And it was a rubber mask of this creature. I think it was like sold at Circus World at Halloween, called like Rat King or something.
Oh my gosh.
And ship was a Robium Clasher, which was a ripoff. The name itself was ripped off from a Micronauts toy. Word for word ripoff.
Uh-huh.
And then I started folding Star Trek into it. We had the USS Condor. I think the only thing that was original out of the entire thing was the Mandian giant. But yeah, we'll have to read it sometime.
Definitely. I want to hear all about the epic that is Star Worlds. Yeah, when you said the most blatant ripoff of Star Wars ever, I thought you were gonna say Turkish Star Wars or something.
Oh, that was the other thing I need to mention. Yes, if you're not familiar with it, look up Turkish Star Wars.
Yeah.
It was made in probably 78 or 79, something like that, in Turkey.
Yes.
Oh, boy, Turkey. And what it is basically a film that has nothing to do with Star Wars at all, except that it actually uses footage from Star Wars. It uses footage from Apollo launches. It uses footage from literally everything they could get their hands on.
Yeah. They swipe all the action scenes, and they just input their own actors into talking scenes.
It's almost like Power Rangers, where they reuse the existing footage and then just do the American.
yeah, pretty much.
To hire some American actors to.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, and if you can't find it, I mean, you can Google Turkish Star Wars and find it, but it's also called The Man Who Saved the World. I think that's what the real title translates to.
Adam something or other, and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, translates to The Man Who Saved the World. And if you watch it and try to figure out what the narrative is, it's impossible.
Yeah, exactly.
And it makes you glad you do not speak Turkish.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to figure out how this any of this means.
And if that's not enough of a challenge for you, look for the lesser-known Brazilian Star Wars. And no, it's not a type of waxing technique. There literally is a Brazilian Star Wars. I haven't found
a waxing that leaves a TIE fighter shape.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it, the shape of an Ewok, but never mind.
Oh, wow. That's like a little leather hood. Oh, and on that note, Steve, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, Steve. Thank you for surviving.
My pleasure.
Bizarre Journey. We will definitely have you back. We're going to have to do a special on Star Wars because that is a very personal thing and something that Steve has far too much knowledge of.
Yes. I was a screenwriter.
Yeah. That's right. I want to talk to the writer.
That
was my sweeping vision for 1977 through about 1984.
But yes, Steve, anytime we can convince you to come back, you're more than welcome with your sage-like advice. Because anybody who has not heard Steve on the other podcast, Hey Kids Comics or USG, this is a very insightful dude. I would go and look up those episodes if I was you.
And also,
I think I will.
Hey, it's me. I'm on the radio.
I love it.
I'm on the interwebs.
Hey, good looking. Well, this is on the web.
Yeah,
sorry. Wow. Hi, good looking, wherever you are. And with that, Steve, again, thank you so much. Thank you to everybody who ever ripped off Star Wars to help us make this show. My co-host, Eddie, of course. And we will be back in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense, which, yes, now it's official.
Yes.
And we'll be back in probably a couple of months with the Star War, the Rancor Pit Star World special.
Good night, guys.